You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
Episode 189 of the Read to Lead podcast is brought to you by Cloud Accounting Software FreshBooks, offering a 30-day free trial, including every feature FreshBooks has to offer. To find out more about it, freshbooks.com/read to lead and enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
It's not that you have a brilliant idea and you execute it. It's that you fumble around for quite a while. And then it's in the fumbling that you're like, oh, wait a minute. And you find your clarity.
Welcome to the Read to Lead podcast with Jeff Brown. Jeff believes that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, then consistent and intentional reading is a must. The Read to Lead podcast will not only help you narrow this ever-important reading list, but also bring you key insights and valuable feedback from some of today's most successful and inspiring authors. And now, here's Jeff.
Hi there. I am happy to have you back for another edition of the podcast that's dedicated to your personal and professional growth, where we dig into leadership and, of course, personal development, plus productivity, career, business, marketing, sales, entrepreneurship, and a whole lot more. Now, in a moment, you and I are going to be joined by a former Read to Lead guest by the name of Dori Clark. She last visited us a couple of years ago to talk about a book called Stand Out. There's a link to that conversation in the show notes page for this episode. More on that later. She is the author also of a brand new book called Entrepreneurial You: Monetize Your Experience, Create Multiple Income Streams, and Thrive. And I'm going to ask Dori to share her thoughts on why being good at what you do and well-known isn't enough to succeed financially in today's world, reasons to consider launching a side business even if you have no plans of leaving your regular job, tips and techniques for monetizing what you know, and plenty more. Helping make the podcast free each and every week, our friends at Cloud Accounting Software FreshBooks, a service that I've been using since late last decade, and it's one of the reasons why I'm very excited to have had them alongside me as a sponsor for about the last 18 or 19 months now. I was just looking at my FreshBooks dashboard just a moment ago. I had some questions in my mind about where things were at, and instantly from my dashboard, I see my profit for the year thus far. I see my spending so far for the year in as many as 10, 11, or 12 different categories. I can click a button for advanced reports ranging from profit and loss to expense reports, accounts aging, payments collected. And at the very top, I see any outstanding revenue, invoices that haven't come in yet, including overdue invoices. And so with a glance, I know everything I need to know from a financial perspective about my business. I'm a big believer in FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. And if you're a freelancer or running a side business or considering your own entrepreneurial journey, as Dori and I will talk about in more depth in a moment, then I encourage you to check out the 30-day free trial from FreshBooks. It's as simple as going to freshbooks.com/read to lead and entering Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section. That address, again, it's freshbooks.com/read to lead. I hope you'll check it out today. Dori Clark is the author of the books Reinventing You and the book Stand Out, which was named the number one leadership book of 2015 by Inc. magazine, one of the top 10 business books of the year by Forbes, and was a Washington Post bestseller as well. I'm sure, no doubt aided by her appearance earlier that year on the Read to Lead podcast. A former presidential campaign spokeswoman, Dori teaches at Duke University's Fuqua School of Business. She's a frequent contributor to Harvard Business Review and is consultant and speaker for clients like Google, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and the World Bank. And she also produced a multiple Grammy-winning jazz album. Her new book out now is called Entrepreneurial You: Monetize Your Expertise, Create Multiple Income Streams, and Thrive. And I am thrilled and delighted to have her back on the Read to Lead podcast. Dori, welcome.
Jeff, thank you so much.
Well, I got to ask first, and I think I remember seeing a little bit of buzz about this earlier this year. Tell me more about this Grammy-winning jazz album you were a part of.
Well, thank you. This was a pretty big thrill for me, and an unexpected one, because I am not coming at this because of my great musical talent, let me assure you. I got involved in the project actually as a result. This is I think an inspiring story for business people. I really got involved in the project through networking. I have a good friend named Kabir Siegel, who is actually a fellow business author, but he's actually someone that knows a lot about jazz and is very involved in the jazz world. And we got to be friends, and I ended up doing him a favor, essentially, by connecting him to another colleague who became a good collaborator of his. And essentially, as a thank you, he brought me in on this project that ended up winning 2 Grammys.
Wow.
So it was really remarkable, you know, getting to go to the Grammys, getting to go up on stage. So it was something I never expected would happen.
Well, not only is that an incredible story, I think Dory's story from working a traditional job to becoming an entrepreneur is a compelling one as well. Dory, share a bit about what the early years of that transition looked like for you.
Really, the first time I got kind of kicked onto the path of entrepreneurship, although it took me a little while longer to actually operationalize, but really the first chink in the armor was that I was a journalist. That was my first job out of graduate school. And I assumed that I would probably just be a journalist forever. I had sort of mapped out this plan in my head. You know, you sort of go from the weekly to the daily, and from the smaller city to the bigger city. And, you know, then you have a great career. And it did not work out that way. I was hired at the peak of the news industry. People forget now, because it seems like it's just been in perennial decline. But I was hired in 2000, which actually was the best year on record for the newspaper industry. I mean, they were just rolling in advertising dollars. And then we also forget how suddenly things can change. The tides turned. And in 2001, just a year later, I ended up getting laid off. And I was really part of that early wave of layoffs, which has now, for the past 15 years, just been a consistent drumbeat. But unfortunately, the day that they chose to lay me off was Monday, September 10th, 2001. And so the next day was, needless to say, not a good day to be looking for a job.
Right.
The world had changed. People were terrified. So I realized in that moment, that was kind of the first time that I realized what it meant to be insecure in one's career, in one's finances. They gave me less than a week's severance pay. They gave me 4 days severance pay. So I had to find something really fast. And that was part of what later propelled me onto the path of entrepreneurship, and realizing that the things that many of us have grown up and been told are the safest are, in fact, not always.
Expound, if you would, on something you say early in the book, why you believe being excellent at what you do and even well known in your field on their own are no longer enough to succeed financially.
Something strange and interesting has happened over the past 20-ish years that the internet has been in our lives, and that is, we used to have pretty straightforward means of people making money, right? So I was a journalist, and I would write articles and then get paid for writing the articles. It was pretty simple. Everyone can get that. But what has increasingly happened in this kind of post-gatekeeper era is that performing a task has become really decoupled from how you earn your money. And so, interestingly enough, I mean, today, I actually, in many ways, perform the function of a journalist. I spend a lot of my time blogging, you know, writing articles for the Harvard Business Review, other places. I get paid zero for that. And if that was the end of the story, you used to get paid for articles and now you get paid nothing for articles, this would be a pretty sad story. But the truth is, what I have learned to do, and what one has to learn to do, because it's a little counterintuitive, is to understand, to borrow a phrase from the internet theorist Doc Searls, you shift from making money from something into making money because of something. And so, for instance, I might write an article for the Harvard Business Review. I get paid zero, but then and this has happened actually many times. Let's say a someone who's putting on a conference reads that article and they say, "Oh, well, we need someone to talk about that at our conference. Let's hire Dory." And then they pay me $15,000. And it's a lot more than I would ever get paid for writing an article. So I think that, you know, not everybody knows how to make that shift. And so one of the reasons that I wrote Entrepreneurial You was to try to help people understand the new ways that you can monetize around your expertise.
A couple of weeks ago, we had on the show a guy named Patrick McGinnis, who wrote a book called The 10% Entrepreneur.
Well, I'm having dinner with Mr. Patrick McGinnis tonight.
Oh, no kidding.
So, yeah, great minds think alike, Jeff Brown.
That's awesome. Tell him I said hello.
I will.
Well, what would you say then about somebody who doesn't desire to leave their employer? They're going to hang on to that regular job for as long as they can. Are there still some benefits to developing entrepreneurial pursuits in the meantime?
Absolutely. I actually think that the need may be even more acute for people who are not full-time entrepreneurs, because, you know, you may have a day job you love, something you want to stay in forever. Amazing. Go for that. That is great. But it is always useful, I say, as someone who has been laid off, to have a plan B, to just have something in your back pocket. And that is useful, of course, because if, you know, God forbid something happens, you have something that you can shift to. But also, in many ways, it is a real asset to you in terms of building new skills, building new connections, and kind of freeing you up. It's a lot easier not to have to be a yes man if you feel like you have some options in your life. And so I'll give you a quick example from the book, Entrepreneurial You. I love this story. I profile a guy named Lenny Achon. And Lenny, so he started his career as a nurse, actually, at a hospital. And he ended up becoming the head of communications for the whole hospital system, which is a very unusual career path for a nurse. But the way that he did it was that he just kind of had an entrepreneurial bent. He didn't want to be a full-time entrepreneur, but he was interested in entrepreneurial stuff. He especially got captivated with the idea of smartphone apps. And so he figured out how to create them, and he ended up creating and launching two of them. So eventually his boss finds out about this side pursuit and calls Lenny into his office, wants to talk to him about it. Lenny is kind of freaks out because he thought, oh no, you know, did I do something wrong? Was there some policy I didn't know about? What is it? But that wasn't it at all. His boss said, "Lenny, we need someone to run social media for the hospital. I think it should be you," because he was so impressed with the initiative that Lenny had shown in teaching himself this stuff and figuring out how to do it. And Lenny ended up doing so well at it, they gave him the whole portfolio of running communications. So having a side pursuit, I mean, yeah, it's a way to make money, but it's also a way to build your skills and to really demonstrate to people in a tangible way that you are a leader.
And not that we're sort of poo-pooing the idea of working a traditional job per se. I think you and I have both come to the conclusion that what we once thought as being really risky, that being considering being an entrepreneur, is actually less so in today's world than working a traditional job.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that what lies at the bottom of it, Jeff, is the fact that we all know, I mean, anybody who knows anything about money has been told that when you're making investments, you don't want to put all your money in one stock, right? Like, everybody knows that. But ironically, at the other end of the spectrum, you know, how we're earning our money, that's exactly what many people are doing, because they're earning their entire salary from one place and, you know, they can turn off that spigot anytime. And so that's why it is so useful to have a side income stream, just as, you know, sort of an extra thing to experiment with. Another person that I profile in Entrepreneurial You, now well known in podcasting circles, is a guy named Pat Flynn, who has a podcast called Smart Passive Income. And his first entrepreneurial venture, he actually started it as a side project. He worked originally in architecture, and he was trying to pass the LEED exam, which is a green building exam. It's kind of hard and difficult to pass. And so he created a blog to essentially just work through how to pass the exam. He was, you know, writing a blog with study tips, kind of encapsulating the things he was learning, etc. So he put it up there, and he realized that it could be just a nice, helpful thing for other people. No real plans to monetize it. But after a while, he took the test, passed it, and he thought, you know, I wonder if there's some people that instead of reading all of this as a blog, you know, just in all these individual posts, it might be more convenient for them if I put it into a book. And I wonder if anyone would buy it as an ebook. And so he figured, you know, why not? Let's just try it out. So he put, you know, this is all publicly available information. Like, he had already published everything on his blog for free, but he's like, you know, it might be convenient. I'll just make an ebook and see what happens. So he puts it up there. His first month that he has it, he makes $7,900 in sales, which was double what he made at the architecture firm. And it actually turned out to be a lifeline for him, because this was 2008. And that month he got laid off from his job, and he would have been in a really difficult place. But because the ebook was doing so well, it actually gave him the courage to say, gosh, you know, maybe I should try to do more with this. And so that put him on the path of online entrepreneurship. But it really came from just a little side bet that he was running that he never thought could become a full-time thing.
And this goes to what you talk about, I think it's in chapter 2 of the book, becoming a trusted source.
Yeah, absolutely. Because of course, you know, people are not going to want to buy anything online from somebody that they don't have trust for. obviously, that is true if you're selling a high-ticket product or service. But honestly, even if you're buying, you know, whatever, a $2 little miniature widget, we all look, right, on Amazon, on eBay, to see what the seller ratings are. That's a form of trust. You're a little skeptical if there's somebody that has no ratings and you just don't know anything about them. And so for all of us, it is incumbent on us, regardless of whatever we ultimately hope to sell or be in the marketplace, to take the time, this is usually through free content over time, free high quality content, of letting people know who we are, you know, putting our stake in the ground so that people can say, oh, you know, I like what this Jeff guy does. He makes a lot of sense. I like his style. Yeah, he's somebody I could do business with. And then later, it makes it a lot easier for you to make sales when the moment is right, because people already know and like and trust you.
Well, as the title of Dory's book suggests, after helping you build your brand in part one of the book, she explores monetization in part two. And Dory, I think most of us at first are kind of uncomfortable with the idea of charging others for what we know. At least I know I was. Share some of what you went through and learned on the road to getting more comfortable with that idea.
Yeah, well, pricing is a really tricky topic for all new and aspiring entrepreneurs. I mean, it's essentially the place where the rubber meets the road in terms of, you know, what's your value? how good are you? These are some kind of fraught questions that people need to answer. And so it can be very tricky. Certainly for me, I was just floundering. I had no idea, because I was going into this business about, you know, marketing and communications, and it was not something that I had actually done before. I had done pieces of it, you know, as like a journalist or working in politics, but I had never actually run or worked at a consulting business doing this. So I had no idea about pricing. So I literally was making it up. I thought about what my acupuncturist charged, and I thought, well, I'm willing to pay that, so I guess other people would be willing to pay that. Oh, but I should probably charge less, just in case. And it's just like ridiculous. You end up working for these like tiny slivers of money. And so, you know, eventually over time, I got my act together and was able to earn a good salary. But it's very hard to get a sense for what's right. So I actually have a chapter in Entrepreneurial You called The Courage to Monetize, because in many ways it really is an act of courage.
Yeah, and that was one of my favorites, because even though I'm past that, I still have these hang-ups occasionally that rear their ugly head.
Yes.
And you know, the doubting voices, the imposter syndrome, all that stuff. Well, assuming we've made it past the mental hurdles, what are some of the more traditional and fairly universal ways, Dory, we can consider monetizing what we know and have learned that you cover in the book?
Yeah, so some of the ways that I suggest people, if they're just getting started, might consider monetizing. There's a world of options, but some are a little more complicated than others. Some require you to have already built up a following. And so some easy ones that I actually like to suggest to people if they're just, you know, sticking their toe in the water is something like consulting or coaching, because first of all, there's no startup fees, right? I mean, presumably people have a laptop or something. That's really all you need. And you don't have to have 10,000 followers to start a coaching business. You need to have, you know, a few friends, you know, someone who's willing to say, yeah, you know, I would like to learn that from you. And so I think a good starting place, and this is something that I actually talk about in depth in a sidebar in Entrepreneurial U, is to actually start out by looking at what people are already coming to you for. Sometimes people wonder, well, what could I possibly even do? But it doesn't necessarily even have to relate to your day job, although it could. But for almost everybody, you are probably considered by your friends a local expert in something. You know, maybe it's that you work out all the time, and so you really are knowledgeable about, you know, creating a workout routine. Or, oh, you know, I don't really understand. I've been trying to break through, but I keep not losing that 5 pounds. What can I do? You know, maybe that's the thing. Or maybe you have really great taste, and so your friends always want to bring you shopping with them because you can always find the right outfits for people. I mean, whatever it is, that's actually a starting point. And, you know, early on, it's not about creating some incredibly lucrative sideline for yourself. Early on, it's really just about getting validation that this is something that you like to do and that other people are willing to pay you, even just a little bit of money for, so you can just test out the product market fit. So if you can get in your first month, if you can get a friend or two to pay you $25 an hour for some kind of coaching, that is a win. You are a coach now. You are doing this, and you can level up from there. You can get more clients. You can raise your rates, but you need to get that early practice in so that you are just getting some momentum. You start to know what you're doing, and you can begin to build on that.
You admit at one point in the book to not really taking seriously the thought of leveraging online methods for monetizing your expertise. What began to turn that around for you, Dorian, and how have you managed to up your online game, so to speak?
Yeah, the way that I sort of evolved in terms of my thinking, I had a pretty traditional business when I launched. I was doing consulting, and that was about it for a long time, just marketing strategy consulting. And then eventually I sort of expanded out once I was able to, once the powers that be deemed me worthy as a result of my platform building, I was able to get a book contract. So I started to get some money to write books. And then I began to get paid speaking engagements, again, once the book was published and therefore had more credibility. So those were great. I loved expanding out into new income streams, but those are relatively traditional ways of doing it. Online marketing was something that I honestly really hadn't even considered, mostly because, especially kind of in the early days, it just has a little bit of a scammy reputation sometimes. You know, you just you see all these people and they're kind of like maybe one step up from the Nigerian princes, and it's just, oh, you know, make $10,000 a day instantly. And you're like, come on. And I didn't want to be associated with that. I was really trying to carve out a premium brand in the marketplace. I mean, my publisher is Harvard Business Review Press. You know, I'm speaking for large corporations. I didn't want to be dealing with a lot of charlatan type stuff. But what I came to realize is that was a kind of excessively narrow view. Like anything else, it's a channel, you know, and channels can be good, used for good purposes or bad purposes. And you just have to get clear about that. And so I realized that I was really missing an opportunity. And so I began to look into other ways of leveraging the online world. So now I actually have 8 different income streams. You know, one of them is an online course, which, you know, I market through my email list. I do affiliate affiliate and joint venture promotion sometimes. So that's a form of online marketing, you know, and there's plenty of other downstream things that are fueled by that. So for instance, I've started in the last year or so experimenting with live events, but that's entirely populated by people who find out about it from my email list. So I think there's a lot of power in it. And I really wanted to make the case to people that we shouldn't be writing it off out of hand, that there are ways to do it right. There are ways to do it ethically, even for, you know, very serious business people.
It's interesting just to see how establishing yourself online can connect you so readily. And doing, say, for example, a podcast where you're interviewing people is a fantastic networking tool. And I was delighted to see just how many people I've had a chance to rub shoulders with that you talked about in the book, because, you know, I took that leap of faith that one day and decided to put myself out there. I blogged for years, Dory, under a pseudonym, under another name, because I was afraid of attaching, you know, my name to my ideas publicly.
Yeah, that's interesting and powerful, because it depends what your goal is, right? I mean, some people originally in the blog world, one of the big sites was called Live Journal for a reason, because a lot of people treated it like a journal, like, oh, let me tell you this combination of TMI, excessive stuff, and then really boring grocery list stuff. And it's like, well, you know, yeah, no, that's just not useful for anybody. But as blogging has kind of matured, it's come to be more about, well, how do you help the audience?
Right.
You know, what is useful to them? But there's still, even when that's the focus, you're absolutely right. For a lot of people, there's something that can kind of hold you back a little bit about, you know, even if you're creating something that is hoping and intending to be useful for other folks, is a little bit of like, oh, what if they don't like it? And but we can't start reaping the rewards until we're out there. You know, we can't start building relationships with Jeff Brown until we know who Jeff Brown is.
Right, right. Excellent book. I devoured it over the weekend. It's the second of Dory's three books that I've read. I have to go back and dig into Reinventing You. But talk about the trilogy that are these three books and how they connect to one another.
Yeah, thank you. I did, you know, not necessarily in the moment, right? One of the points that I really make about entrepreneurship, which I think is a little bit of a myth, is that sometimes people think they have to have this like brilliant idea and then they just go execute it. And the truth is, most people absolutely do not come up with their ideas that way. It's not that you have a brilliant idea and you execute it. It's that you fumble around for quite a while. And then it's in the fumbling that you're like, oh, wait a minute. And you find your clarity. And so I had written Standout, my most recent past book, and I was starting to think about Entrepreneurial You, and it was in that moment that I'm like, oh, this is like the capstone. This is like the culminating piece. This is a trilogy. And you know, I it's not like I set out to write The Lord of the Rings, but it kind of came to me partway through. But they do really fit together as pieces of how people, I think, can make a good, successful career in the modern economy. So Reinventing You is the first step. It's about how do you reinvent yourself into the job or the career that you want. And then Stand Out answers the next question, which is, well, okay, if you're there, how do you establish yourself as being among the best in your field? How do you build a brand? How do you build a reputation? How do you become a recognized expert? And then finally, Entrepreneurial You is about perhaps the most important question of all, which is, all right, Chief, how do you make money at it?
Well, I have a couple of questions, Dory, I want to ask you that are not directly related to the book, if we have time. Before I do that, are there anything else about the book you want to make sure we know?
We have covered so much ground, Jeff. This is great. No, let's roll.
All right. Well, I want you to think about books you've read over the years, or maybe more recently, that have had an impact on you, and share how or why those books have impacted you as they have. The ones you kind of go back to again and again.
I would say that you know, a big one that was important to me when I was first starting out was the E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. Because when I started out, I think there's kind of a little bit of a mindset shift that happens because I think I kind of thought of myself as like, oh, I'm a small business owner. And that's kind of a different thing than thinking of yourself as an entrepreneur. And it kind of clicked into place in reading the book that, you know, the key point that he makes is really like, you have to get clear about the business aspects of your business, not just the, oh, I'm like a craftsman and I do this little craft. It's like, yeah, well, that's nice, but you're not going to be very successful if you don't understand at a macro level how your business operates. You can't just be like tinkering in the basement all day, and, you know, literally or metaphorically. And so I think it kind of snapped me into place to really think of it as, no, this is a serious entrepreneurial venture. And I think it's just a very useful framework. When I think about recent stuff that I've read, one of the things that I really enjoyed, I made a deliberate effort last year, 2016, to I felt like I had gotten like kind of way too in the weeds on business books, although I love them. And so I decided that I was going to very consciously try to also cultivate other skills and hobbies. And so I focused a lot on both theater and comedy, you know, both of which are in prevalent supply here in New York, where I live. And so I read a bunch of good books. And so, you know, some of the ones that are kind of on my list, Born Standing Up by Steve Martin was a fantastic book. Really, really good. I read a book about theater called The Secret Life of American Musicals. And that was kind of a really good overview and compendium of like musical theater history, just kind of good cultural literacy stuff. I read a great book called We Killed by a woman named Yael Cohen. That's a book about women in comedy that I thought was really terrific. So those were some good ones that kind of expanded me in different directions.
You know, Born Standing Up, I loved that book in part because I listened to it, and to have Steve Martin read it to you was just a real treat.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Well, I know you do a ton of public speaking, and you're very good at it, and so I would love to ask if you wouldn't mind sharing maybe a couple of tips for those who also want to get better at delivering a public talk.
Yeah, when it comes to public speaking, I mean, for me, actually, I think probably for everybody, certainly just exposure and practice is the key thing. The way that I was really able to essentially desensitize myself, I think a big part of it is desensitizing your nervous response, was teaching. I did a lot of undergraduate teaching for a number of years. I now do business school teaching for the Fuqua School of Business at Duke, but especially the undergrad teaching, I mean, it was kind of relentless. For one school, Emerson College, that I taught at, I would do these 4-credit classes, which in their world meant that you met for 4 hours per week. And so the classes were 6 to 10 p.m. And it was just absolutely brutal. And so I learned so much in having to entertain these kids, you know, from 6 to 10 at night. and so you kind of you practice, you definitely fail, you know, sometimes they're just checked out. And so you kind of learn some different techniques for how to do that. So I would just say as much practice as you can get in teaching is actually a very good way to do it. The one technique that I will mention in particular that I think is useful and comes in handy for me sometimes is about the use of silence and quietness. There is a tendency, if you feel like you are losing the audience, to want to kind of speed it up and talk louder and, you know, just like kind of the equivalent of like waving your arms to get their attention. But actually something that often works better is the reverse of that, which is where you slow down and you get a little quieter. And you almost force them to lean in to hear what you're saying. And they're not used to that, right? Because they're used to a certain beat, a certain cadence. And so if you're slowing down in such a way that they're like, wait, what is this? You know, oh, is this important? Then you kind of snap them back to life. And so quietness and slowing down is in some ways a way that you can reel back an audience that you may have lost.
Well, I can certainly attest to all of that. The practice, especially. I too teach a college course that's weekly. It wasn't, or isn't, I should say, quite as draining as your situation. Mine's 6 to 9 p.m., not 6 to 10 p.m.
Yes. What do you teach, Jeff?
Actually, it's a podcasting course, Introduction to Podcasting.
Ooh, where do they teach podcasting? It's so cool.
This is at Middle Tennessee State University. In a town called Murfreesboro, east of Nashville. It's the largest university in the state.
Yeah. I actually co-authored a paper with an MTSU professor.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, she is really great. Her name is Jackie. Oh my gosh, it's embarrassing. I'm going to look it up right now. But anyway, Jackie's fantastic. Jackie Gilbert. There we go.
Okay.
Yeah, if you ever run into her, she's a cool lady.
Well, let me ask you finally, Dory, if you know, I know the book's at this point been out for less than a month, I think. What's next for you? What are you and your team working on now that you're excited about? Or are you just kind of decompressing for now?
Not yet in the decompression mode. I figured that basically I just kind of wrote it off that, like, almost through the end of the year, it's going to be very intense with book launch things because, you know, you only have one chance to get that sucker out.
Right.
So really, for about another month through about Thanksgiving, I'm going to be working very hard at just launch things, doing – I mean, this week it's about between 4 and 5 podcasts a day, you know.
It's
a pretty intense pace, but after Thanksgiving, it does slow back down. And really what I'm planning to shift into for 2018, I very much believe in having businesses run on rhythms that, you know, where people get in trouble is just trying to push so hard all the time. And so I think the real issue is you have to know when to push. And certainly in your launch, you know, that's the time. You got to do it. You got to turn on the burners. But for 2018, I am planning to really make it an optimization year. And so I am not going to launch a new book. I'm not going to write a new book. I am just going to focus on a course called the Recognized Expert Course. I also have some less intense courses, one called Be More Productive, another one called the Rapid Content Creation Masterclass. And so, you know, creating better funnels for those things and optimizing the existing resources.
Well, that's excellent. I want to make sure everybody knows where to find that information. We'll, of course, have a link in the show notes page, but it's doryclark.com. The book, again, is Entrepreneurial You, Monetize Your Expertise, Create Multiple Income Streams, and Thrive. I loved it, and so did folks like Daniel Pink, James Altucher, and Allie Brown, among others, who said so right on the very back. Thank you again, Dory, so much for being a part of the show. It was a delight to have you back yet again.
Jeff, you are the best. Thank you so much. I'll just mention quickly, if folks want to get a free self-assessment that I created for Entrepreneurial You, they can get it at doryclark.com/entrepreneur. It's a way of really thinking about how to build multiple income streams into your own business and your own life. And it is always a pleasure to talk to you.
For quick access to the links and resources Dory and I talked about, including that previous conversation with Dory back in 2015, you can visit the show notes page for this episode. You'll find that at readtoleadpodcast.com/189 for episode 189. As Dory and I discussed, building your network is key to this process. And to that end, I want to recommend a relatively new podcast from my friend Travis Chappell, and it's called, appropriately, the Build Your Network Podcast. You can find out more about Travis and his podcast at buildyournetwork.co. That's buildyournetwork.co. And Travis says that each episode is geared toward you, the aspiring professional, and is designed to help you uncover the secrets of networking in order to push you to the next level of success in your life. Consider this, he says, the ultimate guide to growing your inner circle, increasing your influence, and as importantly as anything, helping other people. If you believe that who you know is more important than what you know, and that purposeful and persistent networking is crucial to accomplishing your goals in any area of life, Travis says, then this is the podcast for you. Again, you'll find out more about it at buildyournetwork.co. I encourage you to check out that free 30-day trial from our sponsor, FreshBooks. You can do so by going to freshbooks.com/readtolead and be sure to enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section. 5 Tuesdays in October means 5 Read to Lead episodes. If you missed any of those, be sure and go back to check out episodes from the past 4 or 5 weeks, including conversations with actor Alan Alda, Donald Miller, Shane Hughes, Patrick McGinnis, and Clay Scroggins. Well, that's going to do it for this week. I look forward to seeing you next time for the next episode of the Read to Lead podcast.
Thanks so much for listening to the Read to Lead podcast. As a subscriber, we challenge you to be more than just a passive listener. Become a vital member of the community. Visit us on the web at readtoleadpodcast.com. Until next time, remember, leaders read and readers lead.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.